Do you know the first 3 months of pregnancy, there's sort of almost a cloak of secrecy that surrounds it, which feels a bit strange in our society because we open up quite quickly to friends, at least, about many other things. And then, you know, when suddenly we get pregnant, we all seem to go very quiet about it.
Yeah, no one wants to say anything, do they, until they've had that 12-week scan. And sadly, that's when most miscarriages occur. So it must be even harder because you're going through this bereavement, you're going through this grief, and yet you can't discuss it with anyone.
Yes, and the, you know, you use the word can't. It's like, why can't we? I really don't understand it. And I think that's one of the reasons I decided to speak out about my miscarriages, is because I found that I felt so alone. And it wasn't until I opened up to people when they said, oh yeah, that's happened to me, and I felt terrible too. You know, you think that it might be less of a shock when it happens to you if people talk about it just that little bit more.
I suppose that's the thing, because you haven't discussed the pregnancy and the fact that you're pregnant, you've been at work sort of trying to hide the fact that you're being sick in the toilet or whatever, you then feel almost funny then about saying, oh well, I lost a baby. You mentioned your own story. You've now done a documentary in which you've been very open, very candid about your own experience. What happened to you?
Well, my first two pregnancies, I was in my early 20s, and they were a surprise, and they both ended in miscarriages. But I wasn't so affected by them because I was very young and I managed to move on and I was career focused and that sort of thing. In 2010, I got married and started trying for a baby, got pregnant very quickly. And I was almost 3 months pregnant. It was just 2 days before my 12-week scan. And you know, you think you're out the woods by then. Of course, you're aware that miscarriages happen and they could happen to you. But I really thought, this is it. You know, I'm going to go along in 2 days and, you know, see the baby, see it moving and that sort of thing. And just 2 days before the scan, I began to have very light contractions that quickly progressed into something really, really, very, very painful. I was literally on the floor with these contractions, and I went to hospital, and they said, oh, there's nothing we can do, you know, take a few paracetamol and go home. And by the next day, you know, I was bleeding, and I managed to take some very strong painkillers. And by this point, I really realised that, you know, something was going wrong. But I still went along to the scan, hoping for some good news. And when we went along to the scan, it was very bad news. And the sonographer, it was very sort of badly treated by people when we had the scan. They didn't really say anything. There wasn't like, I'm really sorry, there's nothing there. It was just like, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. It was a real shock. You know, when you get pregnant, I think you something inside you changes very quickly. You become, it's almost a transient period between the person you were before and the person you're about to come, a mother. And you can't help but plan and visualise what your child might look like, or how pregnancy might change your life, how being a mother and father might change your life. And then suddenly when you have a miscarriage, you know, all that is taken away. So it's a future that's taken away, you know, more than a child.
Because you can't help it. You map out your future, don't you? Your dreams, you know, what your child will look like, things you'll do together. And then, as you say, in that split second, that's taken away. It's interesting you mentioned that the reaction of the hospital staff, because yes, I think one of the reasons why miscarriage is still something of a taboo subject is because of this secrecy surrounding the first 3 months of pregnancy. But do you think maybe part of the reason why people don't talk about it is because there is a lack of sympathy from people?
There is a lack of sympathy. And if I'm honest, before I had started to have miscarriages, because I've had 7 pregnancies in total, I would have said, if a friend had had a miscarriage and told me about it, I would have probably said, oh, that's terribly sad, you know, and given her a hug and then sort of moved on. But when it happens to you, it's not something you can get over that quickly. I know people that have been affected by this, you know, by even just one miscarriage. And I say that, you know, knowing that it's never just one. I know that people have been affected by it for the rest of their lives. They never really forget, even if they go on subsequently to have children. So as for the medical profession being a little bit unsympathetic, I think it's something that they see every day, and they realise more than we do how common it is. So it's not such a shock to them. But I think there could definitely be a lot more training and awareness with people in hospitals, because I've done a lot of research myself into, you know, how people get treated. There is quite a you know, a sort of pattern of people not being treated very sympathetically when they go along to hospital, and you know, to all intents and purposes, they've just lost a baby.
Yeah.
The people in hospital might see it every day, but they've just lost their baby.
That's it. It's just a job to them, but this is your life. 5 miscarriages. Wow. Am I right in saying then that the chance of losing a baby increases with every miscarriage?
It depends why you're having miscarriages, and sometimes, you know, you never will find out. In fact, treatment for the cause of miscarriages is really hard to come by, and that's something that I was very, very lucky to find out about my treatment. I found out about it of all places on Mumsnet, and it wasn't the sort of place I ever thought I'd find myself, because one, I wasn't a mother at that point, but I looked and looked online. I went into research mode really when I had two or three miscarriages, and it's not very easy. You go along to your GP, they won't necessarily know that there is treatment there available. Mm.
I was reading that you have to have three miscarriages before they'll even consider investigating.
That's right. You have to have three miscarriages in a row. So you can't have two miscarriages, one child, and then another miscarriage and be treated on the NHS. You
that
have to have three.
It seems like madness.
You do. And when you see your GP, they might not know the specialists that are out there. You know, I had to go and ask my GP. I said, look, I've pinpointed these people. Please can I have a referral for them? And as it was, the waiting list for one of them was 7 months. So in the end, I went private. Something that, you know, I know that I personally really could ill afford to do, but I really wanted to get it done very quickly.
Yeah, understandably. So what was the cause of your miscarriages?
The cause of my miscarriages, and this is certainly the case for a lot of people as well, is it's a theory called natural killer cells. The idea being that you have a high level of natural killer cells that, you know, you have in the body anyway to sort of fight off, you know, colds and illnesses and everything, but that they are attacking the fetus as a foreign object. It makes complete sense. It is half a foreign object. And my treatment involved seeing a lovely man who's based in Surrey called Mr. Shahata at the miscarriage clinic. And he treated me with a very intense course of medication, which dampens down the immune system to stop the body fighting the baby. It involved taking really, really hardcore steroid medication, a very large dose, which really have some very nasty side effects.
Like what?
Oh, I had a moon face, was one of the most embarrassing.
Moon
face. Yeah, moon faces, as it sounds. I was really swollen up and my face went all very... very moon-faced, like, and weight gain and the shakes and memory problems and not being able to sleep properly.
Gosh.
And being quite having sort of very high and low energy releases, you know, being very exhausted one minute and being hyperactive the next. I mean, thankfully I was on a very high dose, but for a short period of time. If you successfully get pregnant and have a and your pregnancy goes okay, you're only on it for the first 12 weeks.
Right.
And then you taper off it. But they can cause some horrible side effects.
Yeah.
It's a steroid called prednisolone. It's quite common for people to take who have asthma and really bad autoimmune problems like that. So,
well, your hormones can be all over the place anyway in a normal pregnancy those first 3 months. So if you then combine that with steroid treatment, you must have been crackers at
yes,
times.
Yes, I was quite crackers at times. And I'm sure my husband will agree with you. And you don't just take them when you're pregnant. You take them when you're trying to get pregnant as well for 2 weeks of every month. But you know, I say that, I mean, it was well worth taking them, and they weren't life-changing.
No.
Side effects.
And when you see your children now, I mean, it's worth every second of that.
Oh, it's absolutely worth it. And you know, my sort of pain is diminishing as I go on. It's Sebastian's third birthday this summer, and I was thinking, wow, you know, that really is something to celebrate. There was a while when we thought we'd never have him. All those times of going to terrible scans and taking the medication and crying over records because I'd just had a terrible time and a miscarriage and all those really horrible trying testing times, you know, and here he is celebrating his third birthday. And it really is something to celebrate because of that. For the documentary, I interviewed lots of other women who have had sometimes just one or two miscarriages, and one lady had 14 miscarriages. But she already had three children, and I just could not understand what was making her go on. You know, why put herself, her family, her body through trying and trying and trying to have that fourth child? But you just can't sort of dictate what someone else is going to do.
She didn't feel her family was complete. Really, how did she explain it then? She
said to me that she felt like there was someone missing at the dinner table.
Right.
And even though she had her three children there, you know, she always wanted four or more, and she would keep trying and keep trying and keep trying.
Gosh. If I'm honest though, when you said you'd had five miscarriages, you know, that crossed my mind. what made you keep going? Did you ever get to a point where you thought, I'm just going to give up, I can't take this heartache anymore?
Yes. Well, no, I didn't give up, but it got to the point, I looked into the future and thought, how often can I keep doing this? My fifth miscarriage was actually after my first baby. So I'd already had Sebastian, who's just about to turn 3. And I thought, I will give myself, I'm enjoying this so much and I love it so much, I will give myself 3 pregnancies, 3 miscarriages, and then call it quits. So whether I would have stopped after 3, you know, I think the impetus to go on is there if you know you're desperate for another child. But as it was, I only had, and I say only again, you know, in the lightest of ways, I only had 1 miscarriage after Sebastian and then got pregnant again. And then luckily that was Elliot, who's now 6 months.
With that miscarriage between your boys, were you on the steroid treatment then or not?
I got pregnant. Surprise! It was a surprise pregnancy,
right.
Although very much welcomed. And I wasn't on the steroid treatment until about 6 weeks into it. However, I did find out that it was a chromosomal issue, because okay. This is the awful term, they call it the products of conception, were tested. So the baby was tested after miscarriage, and it's the first time I've ever managed to convince them to do this. It was a chromosomal issue, so it wasn't actually my natural killer cells.
Okay.
And many miscarriages are chromosomal issues as well. You know, like you said, 1 in 4 pregnancies end in miscarriage, so it is something that is very, very common.
Yeah.
But still doesn't take away how awful it is.
No, and you hear people, and I know their heart is in the right place when they try and reassure people who've gone through a miscarriage, and they say things like, well, it wasn't meant to be.
I know.
You must have come across a lot of that, people trying to say the right thing, but really not.
I think it's the same with any grief. You know, some people are better at dealing with it than others. And yeah, people said some really ridiculous things. But most people I found, is, you know, when I started opening up and realised it was more common than you'd realise, most people were very, very supportive and understanding, particularly the ones who already had children, because I think they know, having had children, you know how precious they are and what a wonderful thing it is. So they have more of an idea maybe of what you've lost, you know.
A bit more empathy.
And also the miscarriages before I had children, it was that whole, will I ever become a mum? You know, they were horrible, almost worse than miscarriage that I had after my one child at that point. They were awful because it's the line between becoming a mum and never becoming a mum. Mm. And at that point, I didn't know whether I was going to ever be successful.
And how did you deal with that? I imagine it must have been tough when friends were having babies and you're having to kind of coo over their little ones. And of course you're happy for them. Of course you wouldn't want to take away what they have. But it must have hurt you at the same time.
It did hurt a little bit. I was trying to be rational about it. And most of the times I managed it. You don't want their baby, you want your baby.
Yeah.
Particularly when you've just lost one. But things, you know, people these days are so open about their pregnancies, and a 12-week scan will appear on Facebook, you know, as people announcing their pregnancies. And when you've had a 12-week scan the week before and seen a dead baby, and then someone, one of your friends puts a, you know, very much alive and kicking with a lovely announcement on there, that, you know, really cuts to the bone.
Yeah.
But I tried to be pragmatic about it and think, well, you know, that's not my baby. I want my baby. I don't want their baby. And life goes on. People are having babies all around, and you know, and lots of people suffer infertility and they're never able to have children. So you try and sort of rationalise it like that. But it is quite upsetting sometimes.
Mm. The 12-week scan with Sebastian, when they did find a heartbeat, must have been amazing.
Well, on the documentary, I filmed this all the way, you see, so I've taken my camera with me, which again, some people think like it's, you know, how on earth did you manage to do that? But it really helped me to sort of rationalise it and maybe even objectify it a little bit so I could take a step back.
Just detach yourself slightly from what was going on.
Yes, it enabled me to do that. But, you know, the camera's shaking at quite a lot of points because I went for quite a lot of earlier scans.
It's a very brave thing to do. I mean, you'd had 5 miscarriages up until that point. You know, there was no guarantee that this was going to be a successful pregnancy.
No, I knew when I was taking my camera in there that whatever the doctor was filming, you know, it wasn't set up. I'm there filming it. You know, whatever he's about to say could be, you know, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. Or it could be, yes, this is good news. And luckily with, actually I have filmed bad scans as well, but luckily with Sebastian, the scans were going well. And you can, you know, I watch it now, back now, and the relief is palpable. You know, everyone, the nurse, the doctor, myself, we're all sort of laughing hysterically when it's there. It's such a, you know, an amazing moment to see it's there and it's still alive. And then 2 weeks later, you go back for another scan and it's still alive. Mm. But the nerves you have in the run up to that, those scans are just hideous.
I can only imagine. I mean, how was the rest of the pregnancy? Because you had been through so much with five previous miscarriages. You know, all pregnant women can be prone to being slightly neurotic anyway when they haven't been through what you'd been through. Did that affect the rest of your pregnancy, do you think?
Physically, I was absolutely fine, but mentally, yes. And even the first year of Sebastian's life, you know, in my head, because when I was pregnant, I kept saying, well, if I'm still pregnant at 20 weeks, we might go on holiday. Or if I'm still pregnant at 25 weeks, I might buy something for the baby. You know, it was all a big if in the future. And I did find myself when Sebastian was born, thinking ahead to his first birthday. And in the back of my mind, I'm saying, if he's still here.
Gosh, do you still feel like that now?
Being a parent is a very anxiety-provoking thing.
Oh, you're telling me.
Isn't it? You know, I'm just, you know, when you're apart from them, you think, oh, isn't that lovely? I've got a bit of time on my own. And then you think, oh, what if something happens? You know, so I don't know what's normal and what's not normal. I managed to, you know, to sort of lead a normal life without the anxiety sort of anything happening to them affecting me. But I think it's always there under the, you know, bubbling under the surface. But I think that might be like that for many parents. I think it's very difficult for the men involved because it's not as difficult, admittedly, because they're not going through the physical, you know, we're going through the emotional things and the physical stuff, and that can get a bit gruesome, you know, the bleeding, the aches and pains and the, you know, all that, and the hormones, you know, not least. But they do have a rough time of it because of that. They might get less sympathy. And with us and the filming, David really didn't want to film this. So I was doing it without his sort of blessing in that sense.
Why was he concerned then about the effect it would have on you, on him?
I think so. And he was also, he felt like he was living his life through a lens. You know, I think that the distance that it gave, that it helped for me to have that distance, it sort of hindered him. It didn't help him at all. Because some very important doctor's appointments we were just about to find out some, you know, crucial information about what might be wrong with me. You know, he's standing there in the corner filming it because I hadn't taken, you know, I wanted to be in it. And, you know, so he found that difficult. But there's one very poignant piece in the documentary when he's just dropped me off at hospital to have what they call an ERPC, which is the very unfortunately named evacuation of the retained products of conception. So basically the baby's died and you need to get it out under general anaesthetic if it hasn't come out. And he's dropped me off and he takes the camera because I didn't take it with me, you know, to have the operation. And he, unbeknownst to me, he sat and he filmed himself in the car. So he spoke to the camera and said, I don't want to film. And here I am filming anyway. And this is probably one of the most emotional experiences of my life. And, you know, I didn't know he was filming that. And one of the great things about the documentary is that everyone who has seen footage of it tells me is that it does give that man's side. You know, David and I are seen having the elated moment when we're doing another positive pregnancy test again and, you know, going through all that together. And it's really nice for men to be able to see that point of view, because it is something, as you rightly said, that often gets a little bit neglected. Mm.
That must have been really moving for you to see him talk to the camera in that way.
It was surprising because I didn't know he'd done it until I looked at my footage afterwards. And it was very, very, very surprising. But I was happy in a way that I knew, you know, deep down, although he was protesting, I knew that deep down he was supporting the documentary as well, or the filming.
Mm. How much of a strain has all of this put on your marriage, would you say?
Not as much as having children has. Because we don't have time for each other now. We have plenty of time to navel gaze before we had children. It's like, oh dear, isn't this
terrible? It's so funny you say that. I saw a stand-up But a comedian last weekend, it really made me laugh. He said, why would you go and have children with somebody you actually love? Surely it would make much more sense to do it with somebody who you hate, someone who you don't mind shouting at.
Absolutely, yeah. Grimacing at each other over and doing the next bit of housework or whatever and fighting over who does what. It was fine. It was. I know that if it goes on a long, long time, you know, and I know people that have had miscarriages and infertility problems over 10 years, I know that, or more, I know that it can have an effect on the relationship, but I think generally we were okay. It wasn't so bad. I mean, there were good times and bad times, and you know, like I said, he disagreed with the filming and I wanted to do it, but generally we managed to sort of hold it together and be supportive with each other. Had it gone on for many years, I don't know that I'm sure it would have had a very detrimental effect on the relationship.
Did all of your miscarriages start in the same way, if you see what I mean? So when it was happening, did you know straight away, it's happening again, this is it?
There's something called a missed miscarriage, which is a very common way of miscarrying, and that's, you don't really find out until very later on, because the baby will die usually about sort of 7 or 8 weeks into the pregnancy, and you might not find out till the 12-week scan. And that's what happened with my very big painful third miscarriage, where it, you know, I didn't know that the baby had died a few weeks before, and then my body started rejecting it. That was 2 weeks before the scan. So in subsequent pregnancies, when I have been checked, I've been scanned very early, so we can see it's not progressing. So there was no heartbeat at all on my fourth miscarriage, or was it my fifth? Sorry, I get confused. On my fifth and last miscarriage, it was a very, very poignant, it was a really sad miscarriage, because I went along at 6 weeks and we saw a heartbeat, and I went along at 7 weeks and I saw a heartbeat, and by 8 weeks the heartbeat had gone. Oh. So that was very sad.
Yeah. Do you think there is enough research being done into miscarriage? I know a lot of people say it's almost that the poor relation in the medical world, you know, a lot of research going into other conditions, but not miscarriage.
I don't think there is amount. There is a lot of research, and the specialist, there's a Dr. Leslie Regan, who is head of the miscarriage clinic at St. Mary's in Paddington, and my wonderful Dr. Mr. Shahata is doing a lot of research into miscarriage. But the experts at the top of the pile disagree with each other about what might be the right way to treat people and what might be the causes of miscarriage to some extent. My treatment has been seen as controversial by other people, but it does have an amazing...
It works,
you know, and it's a relatively cheap way. He has an 85% success rate. And when you think of the people who have found this treatment, they're normally, you know, sort of in their late 30s or mid to late 30s by this point, because they've had miscarriages that haven't been investigated. They might have other issues. I have a thyroid, an underactive thyroid gland, which I've had since I was 21, which is, it's fine in normal life, but it can affect pregnancies and miscarriage. So when you think of the people that have found this treatment, you know, that success rate is even better than it could be. So there is research being done, but it's not easily found and easily accessible. And I guess when you think about it, you know, the NHS in particular is a limited resource, and you know, more money goes into investigating very important things. However, you know, health problems are health problems, and you know, people with bunions get treated quite easily. So, you know, miscarriage is quite affecting when it affects women who are in the workplace. So, when you think how they might lose money might be lost by people taking time off work, and the emotional impact and the physical impact, you know, if people have to go in and have an operation under general anaesthetic, that all costs money. So you know, I think investing in it would be a very good idea as well. But no, you're right, I mean, there needs to be done.
Women in particular are very good at beating themselves up, blaming themselves, feeling guilty. Did you go through that? Did you ask that question, why is this happening to me?
Yes, I did. Did I feel guilty? I couldn't think of anything that I'd done. You know, I hadn't accidentally sort of drunk a lot in pregnancy. You know, people do that sometimes when they before they know they're pregnant. I hadn't, you know, over-exercised. I hadn't done anything that I could think could possibly cause the miscarriages, but it did sort of enter my head. And I think maybe because, you know, I am a journalist, so I did go headlong into research to the cause of miscarriages as soon as it started happening to me, so I probably knew a little bit more than, you know, had I not gone into that research. But I think that many women would blame themselves. In some way, I think it's an automatic response, but it's never your fault.
No, of course it's not. But people do start to do that. Oh, well, if I hadn't have picked up that baby, if I hadn't have had that glass of wine, if I hadn't have done this, if I hadn't have done that.
It's very, very rare, though. Having researched the causes of miscarriage, it's very, very rare that it would ever, ever be anything you've done. Very rare.
Mm, well, that's reassuring to me.
Yes, it is, definitely.
And what about support once you have gone through a miscarriage? I mean, do the hospital offer you counselling? Is there anything available?
There's nothing available. No, there's absolutely nothing available. There's the Miscarriage Association, a charity who you can, you know, choose to contact. I didn't even get any leaflets about it when I've had miscarriages in hospitals. You really are left to your own devices, and I think that can be make it a lot worse for many people. There's no support.
I mean, the thing that strikes me as well, you know, looking at the statistics, one in four women, that's 25% of pregnancies will end in a miscarriage. And yet they're only the ones we know about. I imagine there will be a lot of women who never actually go to the hospital. They don't go to see the doctor.
Yes, that's a very good point. And it is an estimated one in four pregnancies. So, you know, that includes women having several pregnancies and several miscarriages as well. One of the problems, I guess, is that we do know about our pregnancies very early these days. And, you know, back before we had those instant pregnancy tests, you probably wouldn't know you were pregnant until you missed two periods. So 2 months down the line, rather than, say, 4 weeks down the line when we know we're pregnant now. So some pregnancies, you know, it's probably a case of being the body being quite efficient, getting getting rid of them quite early on. It's the ones that sort of linger up until 2 or 3 months that, you know, that I mean, they're all upsetting. They're all very upsetting.
What was your lowest moment? Is there one moment where you just think, that was just, I thought I was never going to pick myself back up?
It was the shock of the third miscarriages. The third miscarriage was very, very shocking. And, you know, I was almost out of the woods. I was almost at that 12-week. We were planning on how to tell our friends and family, the ones that we hadn't told already. And, you know, I thought, this is it. Life is changing. I'm going to be a mum. And when I went through the horrible physical experience, and you know, I had to go home and pass the sack which took several hours. And, you know, people don't talk about this gruesome aspect of it. People see on TV or in films, you'll see a miscarriage and someone will go, oh, that's terrible, they might have a bit of bleeding, then they'll go to bed and, you know, be miserable. But you don't know that it can be very, very physical. Not every time, it can be very, very physical, which is why for all subsequent miscarriages I chose to go under the general anaesthetic. Yeah. Scary as that was.
Oh, Lisa, that must have just been horrific.
It's horrible. I didn't look, but I know people that have looked in their sack and they see a tiny, tiny little baby in there. So it is a horrible physical experience. And then you can bleed I bled for about 6 weeks afterwards. So, it's still the physical aspect takes a long time to get over, as well as the emotion. It's still there for you. And it takes a while for your cycles to get back to normal, you know, for the hormones to get out your body and that sort of thing. I'd say that that was a very shocking moment.
Again, even more shocking because people don't talk about it. So you don't even know to expect that. No one's even aware that happens.
And I feel bad even mentioning it because you think, oh, people might listen and think, oh, that's horrible. Why are you even talking about it? Well, we're talking about it precisely because people don't talk about it.
Yeah, and yet it does happen and people go through it. And as you say, the more that people talk about it, the less of a taboo it becomes.
Definitely. I remember going home after what would have been my wonderful 12-week scan, you know, and seeing you and coming home with one of those pictures. I remember going home and getting drunk and just drinking, you know, several glasses of wine and listening to records and doing all the things that, to be honest, in pregnancy I was missing. You know, I was missing going out and listening to music and drinking, and, you know, you think it's all for a good cause. And I went home and had a couple of glasses of wine and sat there and put some music on and just cried and cried and cried, because just the weirdness of it all, you think you're going to come home and carry on being pregnant and then suddenly you're not pregnant. Mm. It's just such a shock.
How do you go about telling people what's happened?
I don't know how I went about telling people. I think it just happened organically. But no, I remember sending good friends messages, because a few good friends did know I was pregnant. So I sent them a few text messages and, you know, just the normal way we communicate these days on Facebook. I didn't put anything publicly. It wasn't until, you know, it became part of what I was doing for the documentary that I'd started to be very public about it. And that was a bit nerve-wracking as well. It's like admitting to, you know, to everyone that this has happened to me, because you almost feel like you failed in a way. Because I didn't, like we were talking about guilt, I didn't feel necessarily guilt, but I felt a little bit like a failure. Everyone has children. People, you know, 16-year-olds have children. They pop them out left, right and centre, or so we're led to believe. Yeah. And I felt a little bit of a failure. And almost, I don't know where this comes from. It's probably some sort of weird British reserve, but I felt embarrassed that I'd had a miscarriage. Mm. I don't know why. I can't explain that at all.
Yeah, where would that come from? That kind of... I think it probably is that, though. The fact that you kind of think, well, everyone else can do it. Why can't I? You know, and you don't want to... And also, you're a successful person. You're an ambitious